are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
My guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast today is Shilpa Ajwani, the founder and CEO of Uno Mantra, a business strategy consulting and leadership coaching firm. Shilpa has over 25 years of experience in leadership positions with multinationals such as Tupperware and Oriflame. Hi, Shilpa. Good afternoon and welcome to the Elephant in the Room podcast.
Hello, Sudha. So glad to be here with you and your audience today.
Thank you very much. So let's get started. Please introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a bit about yourself.
My name is Shilpa Ajwani, and I'm the founder and CEO of Uno Mantra, which is my strategy consulting and leadership advisory firm. This is my second act, an act of an entrepreneur. But in my first innings, I have been a corporate professional, creating a successful career in some really well-known multinational corporations such as Oriflame and Tupperware brands, where I had my last stint as the managing director for Tupperware brands in India. I am the mother to a 19-year-old and feel very proud to have fulfilled that role to really my satisfaction. And that's something I always talk about in my introduction, Sudha, because I think I'm a nurturer at heart. And that's an important part of me as well. In the pandemic last year, I founded a community for women-led coaching and consulting enterprises called She Mantra. And that is something which is a passion project. And that's something I love to do. I also am very passionate about creating gender equal organizations. And that's something which takes up a lot of my time, as I am passionate for the cause, but more importantly, I'm driven to do something about it as well. So that's me with that.
Wow, that's a lovely introduction. And I'm so glad you referred to your personal side and your son, and your nurturing is important part of who you are, because it segues neatly into the next question. How important is your identity, and what is this identity made up of? I had a bit of a blip a couple of years back when I left the corporate side. And even though I'm a nurturer and I take pride in being a mother to three children, I think externally my identity was all about what I do and what I am.
Sudha, I do not know if that will sound spiritual. Today, I'm at that stage where I honestly feel that that would be my most honest answer when it comes to answering any question on my identity. I identify very closely as a human being, and that's it. I feel I'm this tiny little particle of the universe, and that really keeps me humble. At the same time, I have realized that I am the universe, and that makes me feel extremely powerful. So I think, you know, today I'm able to make peace that the humble side is me and has to be me. And at the same time, there's a very powerful Shilpa, because she is also the universe. Everything else in my journey on this planet will be a blessing in the form of different roles I'm gifted to play, starting with when I became a daughter. And then, you know, I became a wife and a daughter-in-law. Always have been friends and many, many other relationships with people around me till I became a mother, which I think was a turning point in many ways for me personally. And then, of course, there's this whole professional aspect of me, which I think introduced me really to the outside world, not just, you know, in my city, in my country, but gave me exposure to know and make meaningful relationships with so many people around the planet. So all of these, you know, are me. And yet none of these is me. These are all gifts or blessings that we get as we journey through life, is how I have, you know, decided to see it, call it wearing a different lens as one starts to get some gray hair. But this is what really, you know, gives me a lot of peace. Otherwise, when we start to sort of live the identity of, for example, a CEO or a managing director, it's very easy to adopt only that mono identity. Or if I just have the identity of being a mother or a wife, and you know, everything in my life just is about that, then somewhere we will feel not really complete. When any of those things suddenly get taken away from us, then we are at a loss. However, when I choose to see myself as a human being journeying through life, I think, you know, everything just falls into its own perspective. And I like that.
What a wonderful and interesting way to answer that question. So you've been a leader in the direct selling industry for a very long time. As a woman, did you face any challenges that were linked specifically to your gender?
This is a question, you know, which today when I look back, I think I have an answer. However, when, you know, I was in the early years of my corporate career, while still growing in my career, I had actually no inclination that I was a woman leader, right? I mean, such was perhaps, call it a blind spot, call it ignorance, but for me it was bliss because it just allowed me to show up wanting to do my best work, to be fully committed to growing myself and my organization and making my own contribution without the whole idea of gender making me either someone who was less able or more worthy in either of the scenarios, right? So I think I could bring my most authentic natural self without overthinking on any of those aspects. However, you know, as I started to grow, I realized that, you know, more and more rooms found me to be firstly, you know, one of the few women, and then ultimately to be perhaps one woman in a room full of men over a period of time. And then to always have leaders, the ultimate leader, the CEO or the managing director, to be always a man somewhere, I think it started to create some questions in my own mind. And I realized that, you know, perhaps there wasn't anybody who had held my hand and mentored me to actually make me think that I could actually one day be at the helm of affairs of organizations that I truly loved. And once that realization started to set in, you become a little bit aware that there are biases that you encounter in the everyday. And when I saw that I was someone who was respected, the results were great, I gathered courage and I asked one of our, you know, super bosses in one of our meetings about my future and roadmap and all of that. I said, you know, do you see me as someone who could be leading this organization? And he, you know, his expression is something I will not forget because it was like he looked extremely surprised as if that didn't even cross his mind. And he said, well, I think you'll be a great number two, but I honestly don't know if you can be a number one. I said, fair enough. Not everybody can be a number one. They can, after all, be only one number one. I said, can you elaborate what could make me qualify to be a number one or what makes me disqualified and just, you know, making me good enough to stay at a number two, if at all? And he honestly didn't have a great answer to that question. And that is just one of the instances I'm sharing with you, Sudha. Of course, all of us might have many, many more. But that was my realization that, you know, for too long, I had allowed other people to determine what my career should look like. At what pace should I grow? What are the roles that I could or could not really be good enough for? And that's where I realized that our career and our life are our responsibility. So I chose not to blame him. I chose not to look at myself in a way that would disempower me. I took it as a challenge that, oh, great, you know, my eyes are opened. And even if it's a foolish try, but I would want to know what really is the barrier between me and that number one position. How can I get it? And then in the next couple of years, I was a managing director. I was in a leading role and did that for a decade before I set out to be an entrepreneur and set up my own firm and become a founder and CEO there as well. So So that's one answer.
There is so much that resonates, and not just with me, I'm sure with a lot of people, on how we are just like so focused on getting ahead and doing our job and doing it well and keeping the wheels turning, that unless something hits us that really challenges our integrity and our ability, our capability, we don't really recognize that those biases exist. So in 2019, you became an entrepreneur. I can see where the seeds were laid. What prompted you to embark on the journey? Was there one aha moment, or did you take time to decide that?
So I have always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And on my birthday, I think it was my 45th birthday, which was a fantastic birthday. I really sat down and I started to reflect upon how life has been so far, also professionally, my entire journey. And I had a lot of gratitude when I did that little exercise, Sudha, because I felt that I was blessed with a lot of success from a very young age. And of course, it came with hard work and, you know, grit and then a lot of persistence. At the same time, I just couldn't take away from the fact that it was a successful career. And then I asked myself one question. I said, you know, I have seen a lot of success. What does it take for this success to become significance? And I think, you know, asking that question and honestly answering that gave birth to the idea that the time is now. And of course, it took a few months from the time I thought about it to really, you know, moving out of the corporate world with my own idea of what I wanted to do, giving it form and shape, and then getting started off as an entrepreneur in early 2019. So success to significance is the driver.
What is Uno Mantra's business proposition?
So Mantra is a strategy consulting and leadership advisory firm. So I'll break that up in two parts. The leadership advisory bit is what I will start with. So when I take on my work with organizations, and I primarily work in the consumer and lifestyle domain. So brands which are in the beauty and personal care space, health and wellness, food and beverages, home and lifestyle, fashion. So anything which you and I would consume. I'm in love with the entire consumer and lifestyle businesses. I've grown brands and organizations all my life, and it's a natural extension of what I know the best. So I work in that domain. And as a leadership advisor, what I do is that when I go in, I work first with the founder or the CEO and their leadership team, more as a mentor and advisor to them. I help them unpack their personal purpose. And I help them to find meaning and connect that back to the organizational purpose. Many times, organizations haven't sat down and articulated why do they exist, what really is at the core. So that's the bit I start with when I take the strategy consulting piece, that we really uncover the purpose, which I think is a great point of differentiation, but it's also a great way to inspire the founder themselves, the leadership team, and everybody in the team. Then we really sit down and we talk about the strategic roadmap with purpose at the core. And once the purpose is clear, everybody is aligned to it. I see the energy of just working with that team, the before and after, completely different. And with that excitement, then we talk about all the things which make an iconic organization of tomorrow, and that's what I'm driven to create. So we talk about the go-to-market strategy, the brand strategy, the people strategy, the financial strategy, everything that is needed. But I say that those are bells and whistles, but purpose is the real deal. And once that is clear, you can build strategy and actually convert that strategy into brilliant execution. That's what I do, strategy consulting and leadership advisory. And that's the proposition of Uno Mantra.
Very, very clearly defined. I think that's what is required in businesses today. In a way, this is your second innings, your second act, as you said at the start. Is this going to be very different to the first? And clearly, I can see from what you've articulated that purpose is important to you. Exactly how important is it?
So purpose is at the core. And for me, I had to really spend a lot of time in unpacking my own purpose and articulating that. And once that clarity really was defined for my own self, with that inspiration, I actually created the proposition for Uno Mantra Sudha. And that's where I feel that purpose is what wakes me up every morning, most of our mornings without an alarm, because it's creating an excitement, right? To go out and do some great work and to make that contribution, that whole significance piece, I see that coming through every day as I get down to work. The second act I feel is going to be an evolution. It's not a revolution. I like to see it as an evolution of who I was, because the learnings are very much something that I will take from what I did in the corporate world for more than 25 years. I've had my fair share of setbacks, challenges, mistakes. Oh my God, how many learnings, lessons, some really big ones, and some fantastic successes as well, which I feel very proud to own. I have had the big privilege of working with exceptional people, learning from them. And I have also been a good student, reading, observing, discussing, having brilliant conversations with people on businesses and what really is an iconic business all about, and how have businesses that have endured, stood the test of time, what have they done differently? That we love them as consumers, their stakeholders have so much of respect, and they can make profitable organizations and sustain them over a period of time. So for me, I think the second innings is really an evolution, and coming from everything that I'm hungry to share of what I know and I have gained so richly and so beautifully in the last 25 years.
You know, moving from your personal journey to India, what according to you are the key barriers facing aspiring women leaders in India? I won't make it too generic. That's why I'm asking about aspiring women leaders.
When I look at barriers, and I work with so many women as a mentor very, very closely, and I work both with professionals as well as entrepreneurs today, I like to look at the barriers in a way that I can describe them as intrinsic and extrinsic. So I'll start with intrinsic, because I think that's extremely important. You know, thanks to all the social conditioning and a lot of it inherited generation to generation, what we do find is that women tend to grow up with a lot of self-limiting beliefs. A lot of boundaries are already defined for them in terms of what can you aspire for and what you cannot. And when somebody is told something enough times, they tend to believe it, right? And one of the biggest things that shows up in every research that I care to read about women and what really stops them, what's the biggest barrier? The biggest barrier turns out is confidence, or the lack of it. So I think self-limiting beliefs, the lack of confidence, and this ingrained social conditioning creates a very powerful system inside a woman, which actually nags her and stops her and allows the imposter syndrome to show up every time she decides to get out of her comfort zone and actually stretch the boundaries. So that's one piece of it. And an extremely important one, to have a deep, authentic conversation. And sometimes they're not even aware that this is happening to them by themselves, right? The other aspect, which is better known and now beginning to also be understood and researched and spoken about, thankfully, is the extrinsic piece, where we see that there is a whole society which has also decided the roles and responsibilities that we should or should not have across genders. And I think that somehow is deeply entrenched. And that's where sometimes the family becomes the first place where the woman is pulled back rather than propelled forward to go for her dreams. That's one of the first things that I see. The other piece which is really spoken about is that we tend to lose women. And India, we see, has a decreasing percentage of women in the corporate workforce year on year now, thanks to the three M's, you know, marriage, motherhood, mobility. And I think these have been very classic in terms of just putting an end to just so many brilliant careers. Today, though, there are a lot of returning programs where women can even come back after motherhood. But I have heard such horrendous stories of extremely talented women who had to just give up everything that they had worked so hard for, and they just didn't get the respect. Forget equality, forget equity. They just didn't get the basic, decent respect every human being deserves, just because they became a mother and chose to go back and work in the same organization. It's amazing to me. And apart from that, I think there are many other, some of them are more exposed, some of them are below the layers, but they're working all the time. Sometimes differential access to technology, sometimes differential responsibility levels. So look, who are the caregivers, the primary caregivers? We get hit by a pandemic suddenly. Whose responsibility do seniors at home and the babies at home become? And logically, who's then expected, apart from keeping everything intact in the home, also look after everybody who's at home? And good luck to them if they also try and nurture their dreams at the same time. So things like these, I think the pandemic exposed so much of what was already happening. And these are just few of the things that I can talk about. When I work with entrepreneurs, access to funding, to know-how, to even mentorship, I mean, all that is rare. Access to networks, completely missing. There are no valuable connections a lot of women themselves build, or they are seen as the right to build those. So they don't even have the right to build those as per many, many people. So I think it's a complex mix of many things happening inside and outside and around a woman. But together, they very, very capably keep the woman back. And she has to fight against all possible odds to go out and do what should come naturally. So, yeah, there's a lot happening out there.
Yeah, it's a struggle to succeed despite and in spite of the barriers and the constraints. And of course, networks, I think networking is least recognized by women. They have so many things to do that they always prioritize on the others. They probably come to their late 30s and 40s and realize the importance of networks. And that's a big challenge. I think lots of education required around that. So are there some traits that are unique to aspiring or potential women leaders? As a leader yourself, what would you say? Can these be learned or nurtured, or is it inborn? A lot of people say he's a born leader, she's a born leader. How much truth is there in that statement?
I think the debate can go on for the next zillion years, Sudha, on this one. But I have a view that all of us are born with certain strengths. And what's important is to take help and recognize those strengths as early as possible, and then work on honing those strengths. And in that sense, everybody is a born leader, because a lot of those strengths which you have as a human being, as a person, are also extremely good at you being a leader. So like I said, I think nurturing is a strength that I have. Now, that's not just for moms, but you know, you could nurture other leaders in the organization you work for. You could nurture an entire organization, and you could nurture country, right, as a political leader. So these traits are just an extension of what you can apply in the corporate world. And thankfully, a lot of the traits such as empathy, nurturing, being a better listener, collaborative working styles, they were seen as feminine and not really worthy of so-called great leadership. But today, I mean, I think we are talking a very different language, and a lot of the men might have to actually go back to school and learn a lot of these. That brings me to the other part of it. Once you have awareness and you have the ability to get access to information on what do I need and how can I hone that particular skill, and you are willing to take action on that, I feel you can really work on yourself and build whatever doesn't come naturally to you. So both the things are important, that whatever are your natural inborn gifts, value those and really maximize their use. And then there are others where you're not so great. And then those are things that you need to work a lot harder on. Be willing to do that, because growth is the other name of life. And if we are growing and expanding ourselves, that's how we grow and expand our careers and the organizations that we work and lead. So that's my take on that.
Very well articulated, as usual. So resilience versus adaptability, or resilience and adaptability?
To me, I think adaptability is a subset of resilience. I think when you really start to see yourself as not broken and willing to look at what can I do in this tough circumstance or this setback or this challenge that has come upon me, I think that really is an intrinsic part of making you resilient, because that's where you look at bouncing back or bouncing forward, as I like to see resilience as, and not breaking down. I think from breakdowns come breakthroughs. And the willingness to first look at what do I need to do differently in this situation, which to me is adaptability in a way, that you're making peace. Okay, this has happened. Now what do I do? Moving quickly from that step to the other, that really takes you towards building then the resilience muscle. So it's not an either or. For me, it's definitely an and.
It's and, absolutely. And as you said, adaptability is a subset. So we're coming close to the end. And I am really, really interested in knowing who or what inspires you every day.
My purpose inspires me every day, Sudha. And I genuinely say so. I think life has been so different when I had that awakening and I wake up with that inspiration. I think that's definitely a big piece for me. And then I have parents around me. I think that inspiration has been there from day one until today. Since they've seen my entire journey more than anybody else on this planet, I think I still take my inspiration from the two people who I learned everything virtually from ever since I was born. And nature inspires me a lot as well. I am an early riser now. And if you look at my social media posts, you'll see a lot of pictures of the sunrise, of the sunset, the sea and the mountains. I think I take a lot of lessons, a lot of inspiration from nature.
So we're at our last question. One thing that you cannot live without?
Oxygen. But I think I have new appreciation every time I take a breath now with everything that we've lived through. But honestly, if it's one thing, then it has to be the mobile. Yeah, what to do? I think, you know, it has so many roles it plays. And I think it's that one thing that stays with me from morning till night. And I just don't use it for social interactions. But I think it's also my way of acquiring knowledge, of staying connected and even staying grounded in many ways. We'll have a deeper conversation around that. But I can get philosophical about even a mobile phone. So if it's just one thing, it will be my mobile phone.
I'm so happy to hear that. It is the truth. And I think most people should be saying that, but they tend to say something else which sounds sexier for soundbite's sake. But this is the reality. Absolutely. It is our repository. Our lives reside in that little piece of technology, little gadget. So thank you very much for giving your time. It's been a wonderful conversation. I love the start and your spiritual take on your identity and who you are. It has been amazing to hear your inspiring stories and your knowledge about leadership. It's been wonderful all in all. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And it was a pleasure. I love the questions. And I think they made me reflect a little bit more. So I have to thank you and say I've grown as a result of my conversation with you, Sudha. Thank you.
How wonderful to hear that.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcast. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.